Hey, everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for this week's show. It's a couple weeks late, but we're not going to let you down. Because of Junesploitation, because of the 4th of July, we had to delay this very special episode. But don't worry, better late than never. Here to talk about Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is the fallenest king I know, Adam Riske.
The best thing I can say about this movie, I'll just get it right out in the open, is being able to hear Ted Levine go, "Can you isolate that raptor?"
All right, so we're going to talk Jurassic World. I know it's been out for a few weeks. We'll try to talk non-spoilers for like a few minutes for those of you who haven't seen it and are still on the fence. Mm-hmm. And then we'll just immediately get into spoilers. It seemed like a movie that we had to cover, given the fact that we talked about Jurassic World and that was a hotly debated episode.
Yeah, and I also think that like this is a good cutoff, because we don't have to maybe talk about this series anymore.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see. I can't promise anything.
Damn it.
We'll see what happens when the human raptor hybrids
show up. I blame the global box office, because
yeah, I don't know that you're wrong.
If it wasn't global box office, then we wouldn't have the demand for these shows.
That's true.
Yeah.
These movies would, well, although Jurassic World made like record amounts of money domestically.
But the sad thing is like, everyone knew that was not good. And then
I don't know that everybody knew that was not good. I think a lot of people like that movie.
All right. And I used to be one of them.
I remember.
Yeah.
We had a podcast.
We'll get into that.
Anyway. Where are we at? Oh, Adam Riske, have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen like a lot of stuff. I had like the week off, so I killed my DVR and just was going through stuff.
That's great.
So because this whatever's in theaters I've either like I'm writing about for this week, or there wasn't all that good to begin with and whatever. So
I refuse to believe that.
What MGM HD
yes
had a screening of At First Sight.
I thought you already had that on your DVR.
Oh, it was. But it had another one, and I'm like, I got to get a fresh copy.
Got to watch it live.
So, yeah. So
I saw that opening night, by the way. I just want that out there.
That makes me happy that you've seen it, because otherwise
I need to see what it came out.
It would be hard to describe.
With, because now I want to know what I double
featured it with. It was January 99.
Okay. Because I definitely double featured it. I want to say Hurly Burly, but I'm not positive that those are the same weekend.
Could be. I mean, because it was around the time where the 1998 limited end of year releases would have come out. And At First Sight's just like, out with the old, in with the new. Hello. I mean, everybody talks about what a great year 1999 was for movies, but they don't bring up At First Sight all that much. I thought it was... it's funny because there's like a new standard when it comes to these movies. It's the MGM HD standard. It's like the bell curve is basically like, is it better or I don't understand bell curves. is the cutoff
or blind in this or not?
Yes. And Mira Sorvino is the burnt out architect who needs to go relax. So she goes to like this moose lodge. And then she books a week's worth of massages, which seems a little overzealous, because you try the first one, see how it goes. If it's not that good, now you're committed to a whole week.
You don't understand how stressed she was.
She was super stressed.
Being an architect.
Yeah.
Can someone make a master list of movie architects, by the way? That and like ad exec have to be the number one or two movie jobs.
Yeah, that also really messed me up when I was in college, because when I was in business school, I thought it was gonna be like what women want when I got out of college.
It pretty much is.
No,
not sure.
My job, I mean.
Oh,
I can read women's minds.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're always saying things like,
whoa,
too much aftershave.
They're always like, stay away from me. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, so they're just like, pretty good, but not really. And I'm just like, I understand. So she books like a week's worth of massages, and Val Kilmer is the masseuse. He gives her a massage so good. It's like a deep tissue massage, but the tissue is like her soul.
Right.
And then he massages tears out of her eyeballs, and she's like crying, and then she falls asleep on his massage bed, and he like leaves her. So it's weird because it's like they had a one night stand almost. Right. But she's, her foundation is rocked, and she needs more Kilmer, because he's just, he's divine. He really is.
And don't you think like he's better with his hands because he's down one sense?
That's the common,
okay,
accepted
thing. Like if Daredevil was a masseuse, is what I'm saying.
Why? Yeah, I don't know where that sequence was. Maybe the director's cut. I don't know.
He's giving Coolio a massage in the director's cut.
You mean Chef Coolio?
Chef Coolio is what I meant to say.
So Val Kilmer doesn't reveal to her that he's blind. She doesn't know that he's blind because why would she? He's in the shadows, like all good masseuses are.
Like all good potential mates.
Yeah. So she runs out to be like, whoa, baby. And then she finds out that he's blind.
She backs away slowly.
I don't know if she does.
No, she doesn't, okay. But I just wish that was the end of the movie.
Okay. So,
all the wrong lessons.
Then, like, a lot of romantic mishaps happen. They try to make it work, but she wants to, like, cure his blindness, and he's just like, why don't you just love me as a blind man and everything like that? And it's all very Hallmark.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy that Christmas isn't involved in this movie. The thing that I found most interesting... So, the movie itself is kind of boring. Val Kilmer is fine. Mira Sorvino is always good, even in schlock like this.
Sure.
But the thing I couldn't believe was I looked up that on Wikipedia, it said the budget for this was $60 million.
Holy cow.
And this is in 1998 dollars.
Holy cow.
So that would be almost like 100. That would be like almost like $100 million.
Was he not blind the first time? And they're like, wait, we need another conflict in this movie.
Yeah,
and maybe a title.
Like maybe they shouldn't have spent so much money on like the good seats at the New York Rangers game.
But again, and this is something I say on this show a lot: a romantic drama.
Yeah,
a romantic drama. Like, yeah, you can almost stop right there.
Yeah.
Starring Mira Sorvino and Val Kilmer, mm-hmm, as a blind man, got a wide release from MGM in theaters.
See, I was with you with like, yeah, that's crazy. But then when you said MGM, I'm like, this is the only movie that they made.
I know, but they made like two movies a year, and it was this and Autumn in New York. And you're like, well, I got to support the one MGM movie.
I do need to see Autumn in New York.
It's this minus the blindness, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
except
Winona Ryder's dying.
She's sick instead of blind. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good segue, because I also watched Reality Bites again.
Okay.
It was interesting, because I saw it when I was 12, and then never again, and then I watched it now, and I never saw it at the right time.
Okay.
And it's not good. I like Winona Ryder a lot.
Sure.
She's adorable.
Sure.
The characters that her and Ethan Hawke are playing are insufferable.
Someday this might need a podcast, but it won't really need a podcast.
But what I was going to say was the thing that kind of messed me up when... I'm like a lot of people where it's just like, oh, she picked the wrong guy and all this stuff like that. And I get to the end and then I'm like, okay. Then I think to myself, like, I was stewing on this for about an hour. She picked the right guy for the age that she is because she's going to make mistakes.
Right.
And... It's like, oh, it's a realistic ending as opposed to, like, the ending that we want.
Sure.
So it's not satisfying because Ethan Hawke, like, deserves to be alone because he's just a miserable person.
Yeah.
He's, and the thing, to his credit, it's kind of like a performance with, like, vanity, but no vanity in a way, because it's a very showy performance. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a cool guy performance.
No, it's
but he doesn't
a cool guy performance.
He doesn't shy away from just being a complete jerk, like the whole movie, for the most part. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's interesting that they went with the ending that they went with. It doesn't make the movie better necessarily, because it's just like this little like 2 minute sliver of the movie. But I don't know. It was interesting to me that, like, you know, reality might bite.
It's a fascinating time capsule.
Yes. I was listening to the soundtrack on the way over
good
here.
Good soundtrack.
It's pretty good.
Super 90s movie.
Yeah.
And
I like the John Mahoney stuff.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I had a big argument. I think I saw it with the girl that I was dating at the time in high school.
Yeah.
And after the movie, we had a big argument. Because I think even at that age, and I don't think I was supposed to realize it at that age, that not that she ended up with the wrong guy. My objection was more that then the movie bends over backwards to tell you that she ended up with the right guy, that it tries to sell out Ben Stiller and somehow make him this creep who commercializes her brilliant documentary,
which is not brilliant,
and gives you that little like fake show at the end with Evan Dando just to be like, oh, isn't he a sellout? Isn't he the worst? And meanwhile, we're supposed to do this big turn on Ethan Hawke, and now he's romantic and sensitive because his dad died, and like now he's the right guy. And that is where I call bullshit on Reality Bites.
Okay. See, with the Ben Stiller thing, and this is just my own kind of semi-autobiographical thing, I think that his character I recognized in me a little bit when I was younger, and the show that he puts together at the end, which is very bitter and just kind of making fun of her and things like that, and Ethan Hawke especially, that's the type of thing where, like, when the quote-unquote nice guy gets his heart broken, he kind of turns a little shitty after that, and I feel like this is, like, the origins of him being, like, a pretty miserable person because he felt like he was done wrong when, you know, I don't know a lot about love, but I've been around long enough to know a thing or two, and sometimes just people connect and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It makes sense to them. It doesn't have to make sense to everybody else. And I feel like that's kind of what happened with the pairing that we get at the end of the movie. It's like, she's young. She's going to make mistakes. Maybe it's not even a mistake. Maybe it's just the type of guy that she really deep down wants.
I don't think the movie pitches it as a mistake.
Okay.
But yeah, I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah. You should watch it right now.
I'm going to.
I watched Days of Thunder for the first time.
Interesting.
It's not good.
No.
No,
it is not. This is from my least favorite Tom Cruise period.
It ends with a freeze frame of him and Robert Duvall running, and it's like I need to find out like when Tom Cruise learned how to run, because like he's so good at running now. But the freeze frame run end at Days of Thunder, it's like a baby learning how to run. So it's really weird. All in all, it's not a very good movie. It's totally watchable.
Sure.
I mean, it's got the good 1990 cinematography that I like, where everybody had awesome cameras.
Right.
Like, what was going on? Like, why can't we get those cameras back? They have to still be around.
Yeah, it's just Tony Scott and, like, a smoke machine. It's, you know. Yeah,
that's my thing.
Yeah, no, he was good at making garbage look good.
Yeah.
And still garbage. But Kidman, you got some good Kidman.
Oh, yeah.
Caroline Williams.
Oh, yeah, she's like, Rooker's wife.
Yeah. And like, probably her biggest Hollywood role.
Yeah. I don't know, like, I'm kind of coming around a lot on Robert Duvall performances.
Interesting.
I just really think it's the stuff that used to bother me is the stuff that I like now, where it's like, you're not trying, are you? Like, this is so natural, but, like, in a way that's showy and strange, and I just kind of like between this and Deep Impact, I'm just kind of like, I need more Duvall in my life.
Still haven't seen Deep Impact.
It's good.
Yeah. What about The Judge?
I haven't seen The Judge.
Oh,
me either. There's a lot of movies that I just ignored because he was in it for a long time, like The Apostle or The Judge.
Yeah, I haven't seen The Apostle, but I think that's supposed to be good. The Judge, I don't think, is supposed to be good.
No, it's not.
I've never even seen Tender Mercies. Is that the one he won the Oscar for?
Yeah, I didn't see Tender Mercies. I've seen The Great Santini, but that's because I was forced to in school.
Right.
Yeah. And I was like, why is he mean? I don't like
this. He's not so great.
Yeah.
The title is ironic. Oh, At First Sight. He's blind.
It's like he's seeing her. Then he sees her.
Do you think they started?
But is she seeing him?
Do you think they started with the title and worked backwards?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems like it. It seems like
I guarantee you there's like at least one poster where it's just called Love at First Sight.
Yeah.
And they're just like, too many letters. They're like, we're already at 60 million.
It's gonna
How much can we shave off the budget by losing the word love off? That's a lot of font. That's a
lot
of print.
Anything else on your DVR?
So this morning, this wasn't DVR, but ever since The Good Guy, remember when I watched The Good Guy and then I talked about it, the Alexis Bledel movie? I'm just like, I think my thing now is before I do an episode with you, if it's like a morning, just whatever's on in the morning.
Okay.
I'm just, so I rewatched Halloween Resurrection this morning.
Wow. Interesting choice.
And I don't hate it as much as everyone else does. Like, I know it's very bad, but I find it very entertaining.
Okay.
Busta Rhymes is. It's like more his story than Michael Myers' story.
You mean Chef Busta Rhymes?
Yes. we got a cooking challenge. I like Katie Sackhoff a lot.
Yeah, me too. So the last time I watched this was when I think we did the Halloween franchise. So this was years ago. Mike and I did it. And I remember putting it on and the first, possibly even half, I was like, wait a second, this isn't as terrible as I remember.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, it was like, oh, they didn't finish this movie.
No.
This just came out.
No, I mean, it's a real sloppy Joe.
Yeah.
But I get around, like, especially around, like, the weeks leading up to Flashback Weekend, that's when I kind of kick into, like, horror mode, and I like to watch kind of crappy horror movies.
Sure.
So from July through the end of October, that's like my horror season.
Okay.
So I'm getting into it. So Halloween Resurrection was my kickoff.
Do you think they're going to do a Resurrection reunion?
Oh God, they should. I love
too many big names.
I love the terminology of the photo op and like the autograph stuff where they're just like door family combo. I love it. I can't get enough. So when they're just like, the Resurrection Reunion. If they do a Halloween. All right. I'll put my money where my mouth is. If they do a Halloween Resurrection Reunion.
Yeah.
For, I don't know. I guess it would be 20 years at this point. Maybe in a few years.
In a few years, yeah.
Then I will do it.
All right.
Yeah.
I honestly think there's too many big names because some of those people went on to careers.
Who do you think they wouldn't be able to get? I mean, they won't be able to get Jamie Lee.
No.
But
she, I mean,
you'll definitely get
really count
the six kids. You could get
the
six kids.
I don't think they could get Sackhoff.
They could get Sackhoff.
No.
Oh, yeah, you're right. No, they could. But we could probably get Thomas Ian Nicholas.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because he's at Wizard World every weekend.
But I don't even know if you could get Bianca Kajalich or whatever her name is.
What's she doing nowadays?
She's in stuff. She was on a sitcom for many years with David Spade.
You could get Ryan Merriman from Disney's Luck of the Irish.
Probably.
He plays Deckard.
Yeah.
Her online
friend.
Well,
he's going to be parking cars that weekend anyway. So you burnt Merriman. Yeah. I know nothing about Ryan Merriman.
Sean Patrick Thomas, I think we could get.
Maybe.
Yeah. I want Heather to host the Save the Last Dance panel.
That would be terrific.
Save the Last Panel.
How did Styles never show up in a Miramax horror movie?
Who's Styles?
Julia Styles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I jumped over to Save the Last Dance.
I think it's because she was kind of good for a little while.
Maybe. I just feel like everyone in that age group. P.S. When we saw Summer of 84 a few weeks ago at Cinepocalypse, I was positive the entire movie that the woman playing the main kid's mom was the other 10 Things I Hate About You girl, the younger sister.
Oh, the one from Alex Mack.
Yes.
Okay.
I was positive it was her, and I was like, I'm so old. She's playing like a teenager's mom. But it wasn't.
Oh, okay. I can't remember what the mother looked like.
She looked like that girl.
Okay.
Only like 20 years later.
Okay. And then, are you going to talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp?
No, go ahead.
Okay, that's the only thing. Because I know you're writing a review for it.
Yes.
And I'm eager to read it. I liked it. I think I'm definitely in the afterglow of loving Marvel now, because I really, really loved Infinity War. And I was really like more hyped than I usually am for Ant-Man and the Wasp. And yeah, I thought it was just like, it's so nice to see just a movie that sets out to entertain you and is good at what it does. Like, it sets out just to do that. And it is funny. The action is clever and cute, and everyone's charming. It's a little bit, and this is kind of like a victim of just the talent involved. It's like, there's so many talented people. You kind of want them all to have like maybe more moments, but that's fine. But it's, I don't know. Like, it was funny. I was talking to Alejandra leading up to seeing it, and like, it's kind of like a really sexy Marvel movie.
Interesting.
I don't know why. I don't usually find Marvel sexy.
Is it because of Fishburne, you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when he says Goliath, I like popcorn flew everywhere. No, I don't know. I think it's because like everybody's in suits and sweaty kind of out of breath.
Interesting.
And we got Judy Greer and True. We've got whoever's playing Ghost and we got Michelle Pfeiffer and we got Evangeline Lilly and stuff like that. And I was just like, yeah, this is like a really horny Marvel movie.
I did not take that away.
Okay.
At all.
Okay.
I'm interested that you did.
Yeah. No, I was into it. It was like Marvel Sick Day.
Should Lawrence Fishburne have played his entire role as his character from Higher Learning?
Yeah. You would be like,
I was Goliath.
He's just like, Scott and Hank Pym, would you like a pepper? would you like peppermint. A peppermint? Would you like a peppermint?
I forgot about peppermint.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. I thought it was really entertaining. I'm a little frustrated that there is so much cool use of like the powers.
Mm.
But I feel like all of them were put into the trailer. And it's a really cool trailer. And like that made me want to see the movie because I was like, oh, they're doing all this cool stuff now with the shrinking and the growing and the whatnot.
Yeah.
But every one of those moments was in the trailer, basically. Yeah. Which, whatever. Yeah, I thought it was fun. I liked, you know, my review will be out by the time this podcast comes out, but I liked the fact that after Black Panther, which is good, but like very sort of ostentatious, and Infinity War, which is like every character ever and the world is at stake and blah blah blah, that this is just like, let's all try to steal that little building. You know that it's just like the stakes are so low. The world is not, even the villain is like almost not a villain. People aren't getting killed left and right. It was just so like, well, this is a happy movie.
Well, there's even like a scene where somebody's like, I'm gonna kidnap his daughter, and then the guy's like, no, don't do it,
too far, man.
He's just like, because you didn't have sufficient rest the night before.
So I really liked that, and I recognize that like it's almost not a movie in terms of the story. It kind of like early on gets into motion where it's like, we got to do this thing. And then that's just the rest of the movie. It basically doesn't stop to breathe. It's like, oh, now we got to do this thing. Uh-oh, now we got to go over here and do this thing. There's not really a story. Like, I recognize the first Ant-Man probably has a clearer story and like a character arc for Ant-Man.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm going to watch this one a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't the biggest fan of Ant-Man. I only saw it once.
Right?
But I thought this clicked for me more. It was like the Monsters University, the Monsters Inc. for me. I know people are.
But I could see a lot of people comparing this to Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
Where it's like there's not a clear story. There's too many characters. It's trying to do too many things. But whereas Iron Man 2, I think, was trying to service too much in the MCU.
Yeah.
This isn't. And that's one of the things I liked about this too. This is just its own little thing that, I mean, there's references to other Marvel movies, but
I'm of two minds about one thing I want to ask you of it. Like at the beginning, they kind of really set it up that this is going to be like a rescue movie.
Yeah.
And it turns out to not just be that.
Right.
I think like I would be more interested in it just being the rescue movie, but at the same time, the quantum realm is kind of like not a really pleasant design to look at.
Okay.
I am kind of happy that like it's in San Francisco.
Right.
Like I would much rather look at San Francisco for 2 hours than see like particles and like
right.
pink purple poo and stuff like that. Like, I don't care.
I thought it was fun. I was pleased with it because I was looking forward to it. Especially, again, given the tenor of so many summer movies and how just kind of like grim and like they are.
Yeah.
This was just really fun and kind of bouncy and got to be its own thing in a way that the last Ant-Man movie I don't think got to be because of just all the production stuff. I don't have that many movies to talk about. I will, in the lead up to my actual most anticipated movie of the summer, Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yeah.
I have rewatched I'm rewatching all the Mission Impossible movies. I'm only up to two.
Okay.
And my feelings about the first one will remain.
Mm-hmm.
When the first one came out in 96, it was sort of at like a high peak in my De Palma obsession.
Okay.
And it had a great trailer, and it was De Palma doing this big summer blockbuster. And it's like in the top 10 of most excited I've ever been to see a movie. And I saw it, and I was like, yeah, okay, you know, mm-hmm. like, I liked it enough. I wasn't super crazy about it, and yeah. I don't think I still am.
Mm-hmm.
I like it, especially as a summer movie. I think it's very different than a lot of summer movies we get now.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of De Palma in it. It's very well made, but it's not – it's almost like going back and watching the first Fast and the Furious, which is a movie mm-hmm. I like a lot, but yeah. It's not – what you love about those movies at this point.
Okay.
Or at least around like 5 and 6, because okay. I don't love those movies anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a good movie that doesn't resemble the ones that I ended up really loving.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it definitely, the scope of it all yeah. has really gotten so much bigger that it feels quaint.
There's basically one action set piece at the end, and it's a yeah. good set piece.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is, as I was watching it, I was like, oh, this is all kind of done on green screen and mm-hmm. and a stage, and it's very well done for that, especially mm-hmm. for 96. But now if you would watch it, it's like, oh, Tom Cruise would just really be on the outside of a train and
yeah.
almost dying.
I like the first Mission Impossible. I've never loved it. I yeah, think I'm kind of in the same boat as you. The thing that I always got out of it is, like, if aliens came down to Earth and said, what is the most paramount movie you could show me?
It would be Mission Impossible.
You would show them either that or The Saint.
Ooh, yikes.
It's those, like, two one movies of those
are not
two.
Comparable.
It's like one of those two. And then also, what's the name of the... It's Emmanuel Beard.
Yeah.
I always thought she should have been like in a Fiona Apple movie. Like, she should have played...
I could see that.
Yeah.
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 A lot of her role seems to have been cut out.
Yes. Yeah. I thought she was going to be like a huge star after this. I thought that was going to be like the thing that happened. And then
no.
she might have been in like French
wasn't she
cinema,
in the?
I don't know. But
wasn't she in the Diabolique remake?
I don't think so. Was she?
Was that Isabella Gianni?
Yeah, it might have been. I know it was Sharon Stone and Chaz Palminteri.
Yeah.
But I can't remember who the
How
other
How can we not remember
was.
The... Okay, anyway. And then I watched Mission Impossible 2.
Ooh.
Which I remember liking.
Okay.
In 2000?
Yes.
When it came out, or 2001?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of that story. Because yeah. I remember liking it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't... anymore. It yeah. was a chore.
Yeah,
to
it's
get
a real drag.
Like, worse than I expected it to be. I was, yeah. I thought it was going to be like, okay, this isn't mm-hmm. as good as I remember. This is kind of dumb. But,
yeah.
like, it's physically difficult to get through.
Yeah, I do like some of the action at the end, but that's about it. Like, the fact that two motorcycles drive into each other and the guys jump in midair and give each other, like, a hugs body slam is kind of funny.
It was, in fact, Isabella Gianni.
Yeah.
Here's something that I came to realize. I'm not maybe the biggest John Woo fan, and I know that that's mm-hmm. blasphemy because I like The Killer. I think Hard Boiled is great. And I have enjoyed some of his American movies. Obviously, I think Hard Target is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Face Off is very entertaining. I'm not as big a Broken Arrow fan as you, as we discussed recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think almost all of the choices he makes in Mission Impossible 2 are choices that I don't like,
mm-hmm.
whether it's repeating action or slowing action down or just stretching out these moments or just making things ridiculous. It just doesn't feel like a Mission Impossible movie at all in terms of what they have become.
Yeah.
Because it's...
It's him. Yeah, it's him on his own, and there's no team, really. And
it's
like
just
that.
A lot of, like, shooting guns and trying to save a girl, and it's like, none of this is what Mission Impossible is now.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
I do want to rewatch them, like, leading up to the new one, because it's been a while since I've seen...
Know.
Thank you. It's been a long time since
long
I've seen...
Time.
3, and I only saw 5 once.
Me too.
I think that I have a, not that 4 and 5 are only successful because of this, but I think that humanizing him in 3 went a long way for us, making us care in 4 and 5. Like, I feel like 3 is like the most crucial movie of that series.
Right.
Because that's when the action started expanding. They got, you know, J.J. Abrams kind of lent his sort of... One thing I'm really learning is just like how big of a J.J. Abrams guy I am. Sure, just same. Between like Mission Impossible 3 and
Regarding
Star
Henry.
Trek Super 8. I don't dislike Regarding Henry.
Gone Fishing.
I haven't seen Gone Fishing.
Well, his fingerprints are all over it.
But everybody's just kind of like, oh man, wish he wasn't doing Episode 9. And I'm like, oh man, I'm excited for Episode 9.
So anyways. I'm cautious about
it. Okay.
I don't know.
I feel like if we're going to start being cautious, though, not saying you're wrong,
yeah,
but I feel like just in general, as a populace, if we're going to start being cautious about somebody who's as talented as J.J. Abrams, who has a misfire every once in a while, then like we have to be cautious about 90% of directors.
100%. And it's not that I'm anti-J.J. Abrams, because I think The Force Awakens is very entertaining, and I think he did a good job. And I would be excited about it. My cautiousness comes in because I really like where The Last Jedi kind of left things. I really like The Last Jedi, and I really like where it left the series. And my concern is that J.J. Abrams is not going to follow through on that stuff, that he's going to try to swing it back around to a J.J. Abrams nonsense movie. Because think about so much of what The Last Jedi does is kind of toss out the stupid, unnecessary shit that he sets up in Force Awakens.
Yeah.
And so it's basically someone saying, like, your ideas were kind of dumb, and so I'm going to ignore them. And so I worry that J.J. Abrams is going to be like, oh, but I still wanted to tell the story of who Rey's parents were, so let's... I'm going to bring that back in, and I'm going to reveal who Snoke was. That kind of stuff I'm worried about. Not in terms of him directing it, because I think the direction is always super fun, and he's really good at it. I worry just about him sort of overseeing the script.
It's going to be interesting, because like, I don't feel like darkness is where his strong suit is, and Last Jedi definitely took like a turn towards more bleak. But when it comes to character work and things like that, I think that he's like really strong with that. So I'm hoping that he takes what he's inheriting from Rian Johnson and like just kind of deepens that aspect of it.
And so if that's he does that inside of a J.J. Abrams directed movie, I'll be super happy.
Cool.
All right, we'll stop with the mission. I'll just stop at Mission Impossible 2 because we need to talk about Jurassic World.
Yeah, that's what everyone's here for.
Fallen Kingdom. Mm-hmm. You saw this movie twice.
I did, by accident.
This is kind of how I saw The Lost World twice in 24 hours.
Which is apropos because this movie is basically the bizarro version of The Lost World.
Kind of, yeah. So we're going to talk spoiler-free about The Lost World. Just kidding. Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom for a few minutes, and then we'll get into spoilers. But maybe just give your initial reactions.
So I had bought a ticket for the Thursday night show already and was excited, and I don't know why, but I think it was mostly I was excited because Jay Bayona was directing. And I just fell to pieces during A Monster Calls. I haven't seen The Impossible. I saw The Orphanage once, but I don't remember hardly anything from it.
It occurred to me as I was looking through his credits, I have not seen one of his movies, except for this.
Okay.
This is my introduction.
It's a bad introduction. Yeah, but no, A Monster Calls, I think, especially around the time that I saw it, I was going through something, and like that movie allowed me to kind of have like a really cathartic couple of hours. So it means a lot to me. It's a movie I've never revisited just because I know how much it took out of me, but like it was really something. So I was excited to see what was going to happen with Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Jurassic World, the first one, is a movie that I said that I liked on the podcast that we did. It's something that every time I've revisited it since theaters, I cannot even finish it.
I have never revisited it.
Yeah. So I had my ticket already on Thursday night. Then I got an email that for Jan's birthday, everybody was getting together and going to watch it on Friday. So I had a choice. I'm just like, should I go on Thursday or just eat the ticket or what? But like, I went anyway. And I wasn't going to miss Jan's birthday because it's Jan. Jan's awesome. So went twice. After I saw it the first time, I was like just livid. Like, I just thought, I don't get that angry when I see movies. I don't really hate movies anymore. But like, this was, I thought it was so bad that I just, it was past like being mad. It was like, I just don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, and it wasn't just, I just don't care anymore with this franchise. It was, I don't care anymore with movies. So, like, I was, like, going through the calendar of stuff coming out, and I'm just like, I'm not going to see Skyscraper. I'm not going to see The Equalizer 2, because what's the point? Like, what's the fucking point?
Yeah, I don't
like,
think you're wrong
like,
there.
Like, there's stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I'll see Ant-Man. I'll see Sicario, which was a mistake, because Sicario 2 is pretty bad. But
I keep hearing such mixed things.
I don't know. The people who are saying good things about it, like, I don't understand it. It's weird. So I went back and saw it on Friday. I was poker faced the entire time. I'm like, I can't let them know that I hate this movie. So, like, thank God you and I were texting back and forth because I could, like, let off a little bit of steam. I think I was saying stuff like how I needed, like, a crisis blanket stuff like that. So, I went on Friday. It was in IMAX. It made it a little bit more of an interesting experience because it's a very visual movie. And, like, you know, at least I could see some of that stuff. And some of the imagery in it is, I'll get into later, but is pretty good. Mm-hmm. But the movie itself is just, it's too dumb. It's just, that's the biggest problem I have with it. It's something that an objectively, like, medium IQ person would sit and watch, and not even nitpicking. It's just the decisions they're making are bridges too far and stupid, and they're going to just back you into corners that you, there's like a line late in the movie, and I won't say what it is because we're not in spoilers yet, but a character literally says before they unveil a reveal that is so awful, he says, you literally can't put it back in the box. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, are you talking to me, like to the audience, or like, what are you doing?
Yes.
So that's what it is. It made me appreciate the Lost World more.
Interesting.
In a weird way. I don't like the movie, but it seems Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom makes the Lost World a better movie.
Okay.
In my mind. Okay. Just because I know what a worse, what the, an even worse version of the Lost World is.
Yeah.
So that's my overall impression.
The comparison is interesting. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can compare this to the Lost World, but I think one way in which they're similar is that I think they're both bad, stupid movies directed by people with talent. I'm not comparing J.A. Bayona to Spielberg.
Yeah.
But he's clearly a better director than Colin Trevorrow.
Yes.
Because, yeah, I'm in a weird position where I didn't see this movie opening weekend. I was in the throes of Cinepocalypse and had to wait about a week to see it. And I was saying to Adam before we started recording that if I didn't know that we were recording this podcast, I'm not positive I could have gotten up the energy to go see it because I didn't care for Jurassic World. I don't really think I've liked one of these movies since Jurassic Park 25 years ago.
Yeah.
So why am I going to go, especially a week after it had been out? You know, if you're going opening weekend, if I'm going for Jan's birthday, like there's a sense of fun and like, oh, I'm being part of this thing that's happening this weekend. A week after the fact, it's like, what? It was so hard to get up the energy to go see it. Anyway, I think because my relationship to this franchise, which isn't even to say that like your relationship to the franchise is personal. I just think I love Jurassic Park, but like, I don't know anybody that loves Jurassic Park like you love Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a little bit more of a personal element for you when one of these movies is so shitty. Whereas I'm at the point where I'm just like, what? Yeah, of course you are. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew you were a scorpion. So like, and then I think there were about two things in it that I liked.
Yeah.
And so I almost feel like, I think because my expectations were so low, I expected it to be the worst movie ever. And there were two things in it that I liked. So I was like, oh, okay. I didn't feel any passionate dislike only because I can't possibly feel any passion. I think I was more frustrated with Jurassic World because I was like,
okay,
there's potential here, and I allowed myself to be excited about Jurassic World, and I didn't like it at all, and so there was disappointment, whereas, like, how could this movie possibly disappoint me, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a garbage movie that I knew was going to be garbage. I agree with you in that it is almost a new low in stupid shit happening in a movie. The thing I keep going back to is, you know, I don't love the movie Prometheus. I'm very frustrated by the movie Prometheus. Prometheus is a very stupid movie made by very smart people.
Yeah.
And it looks and feels like a really smart movie, but it's like dumb, right?
Yeah.
And there's a moment in Prometheus where these two scientist characters are freaking out and afraid, and they're lost in a cave, and they come upon this creature, and the first thing they do is like, let's pick it up and talk to it. And that was a moment where I think a lot of people were like, well, this is so stupid. Why would they do that?
Yeah.
This movie is 120 minutes of that scene of just characters doing the dumbest thing they need to do in order for the next thing to happen.
Yeah. You could almost just, because obviously, well, first off, Rafe Spall is one of the dumb people in Prometheus.
Yeah.
And he's in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, you know, so maybe he's the common denominator.
For some reason, I didn't even put that together, but he's 100% that character.
Mm-hmm. I lost my train of thought making a Rafe Spall joke. So
not even a joke.
Me.
Just an observation.
Just an observation.
So we'll get into spoilers. I'll mention, I guess I can say this without spoiling anything, I think. I thought the opening scene was good. I thought it was well directed. It's the same opening scene we've seen in so many of these movies, which is, you know, here are the randoms who are like working on the island and then they get attacked by dinosaurs. But I thought there were a couple moments, one where they're underwater and the camera pans up for 1 second and you just see the shadow of the big scary dinosaur. And then another one where a character is doing something and isn't aware that I think there's a T-Rex approaching, and it's just revealed each time the lightning flashes and each time it's a little bit closer. And I was like, okay, I'm on board for this. Like, this is a better directed scene than anything in Jurassic World.
Yeah.
And then the other scene that I thought was good, well, well directed, I guess, was the trapped in the ball underwater sequence, which is kind of this long one take thing where these characters they're in that little ball, which, by the way, I always assumed when I saw Jurassic World, because of some of the technology, that it existed in the not too distant future.
Yeah,
but we find out in this movie it was 2015.
Yeah.
So okay, anyway, so they're in that little ball and it rolls down, you know, a mountain and into the water, and it's filling up with water and it's all kind of done in one take. And I thought that that was a little showy, but well done.
Okay. I agree with you on the lightning flashing T-Rex reveal.
Yeah.
I don't like the scene, but I liked that part of the scene.
Yeah, no, the scene itself is dumb.
No.
But it's well directed.
Well, the capper of the scene is what makes me not like
it. We'll get to that,
but
because it's the first of four in this movie.
Okay.
Of the exact same trope.
Okay. No, the lightning flashing thing, and this is like, you know, you already outed me as like Jurassic Park man, so like,
It's Parkman.
So Jurassic Parkman. It's Jerry Parkman. Jury.
Jerry Parkman.
Yeah. Because I'm in it till I'm dead. Geriatric Parkman. The lightning flashing reminded me of like the opening of the Sega game, because they do a lot of that.
If
you watch like the intro to the Sega game, it's very much like that. So I was just like, this is just like the Sega game. The gyrosphere thing, that the hamster ball or whatever, I only know that because I go to Target enough to see the toy. And by that I mean I only go to Target just to look at the gyrosphere. So I liked it as an action. It's by far the best action sequence in the movie.
Yes.
But it occurred to me while I was watching it that something much more interesting is happening around the hamster ball, which is dinosaurs are falling off of a cliff into the water and drowning and dying because they're running away from volcanic smoke and ash and lava.
Yes.
And here's where I have like a big divide with this movie. Is it's okay. The first half is like a traditional Jurassic Park movie. They're trying to get the dinosaurs off of the island to a new island because a volcano is there that they didn't know was not dormant.
When they built Jurassic World three years ago.
Yes.
So again, if the dinosaurs had never escaped and killed everyone in Jurassic World, if it was business as usual and the theme park business was thriving, they got 3 years.
I want to make a joke, but it might upset you because it's about Joe versus the volcano.
Oh, dear.
I'm wondering if, but maybe they should have just let Joe jump into the volcano.
He did.
Yeah. So,
the volcano spit out.
That first half, I think, could have been a whole movie.
I agree with you.
I think having, needing to get dinosaurs from one island to another is a compelling enough idea for an entire movie.
When we get into spoilers, I want to talk about that.
Yeah. The second half is just, I don't know who approved this.
What, Jurassic Mansion? You're not into you're not into Jurassic Mansion?
No, all that stuff, I'm just like, whatever. But the first half of the movie, I think, could have almost taken... All right, you've done the monster movie 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
The first movie is half a monster movie and half of a, oh my god, it's dinosaurs.
Yes.
Because the people who are reacting to it have never seen dinosaurs before. We've never seen dinosaurs before. The key, one of the key elements of why Jurassic Park works so much is because we don't know what it looks like for a T-Rex to eat a person.
Right.
We don't know what it looks like for a raptor to be out in the open chasing, stalking people. We don't know what any of that looks like. We know totally what everything in Jurassic World and Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom are going to look like. Mm-hmm. So part of that suspense and element of excitement is gone.
And so do the characters.
And so do the characters.
So we can't even experience it through them. We can't even experience it because everyone just now takes dinosaurs as a given.
Yeah.
What's interesting about that?
Nothing. So what you could have done, and I hate being like, you know, backseat driver to a movie, but it's so, the elements are right there. So it's so obvious. It's just, it's basically, you could turn it into like The Land Before Time almost, where it's just like, how do we get them to the Great Valley? And then there's some kind of wonder to that because you have your mixed emotions. It's just like, well, this is something that's trying to kill me, but I feel compelled to save it because we also created it and what do we owe it and stuff like that. And then there's some kind of moral dilemma to it. It would be more of like a PG movie but try it. Who knows? You've got a whole new generation of kids who love dinosaurs. Maybe make some friendly dinosaurs. Maybe only save the friendly dinosaurs. Why do you have to save all of the dinosaurs? So anyways, so that's one thing, but I don't know.
Well, let's move into spoilers. Because one of the things that I hear... Okay, we'll move into spoilers.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. 3, 2, 1. After I saw the movie, I went back and like listened to the Slash Filmcast and read a couple of reviews. And one of the things that I've noticed is that more than one person has said that they like the fact that in the second half, it just becomes this, everybody says gothic, I guess, because it takes place in a mansion.
Yeah, that's all it takes to be gothic, and night in a mansion.
Gothic monster movie inside of a mansion. Because, you know, we've seen the movie where they're on the island, you know, a bunch of times. And I'm like, okay, I get that it's something different, but by that logic, had they gone to space, you would have also been happy. And I know everybody would have because, well, haha, now we're all ironic and it's funny when things go to space. But like, just because it's different doesn't make it better even good.
Yeah.
So my thinking was, I'm sitting there watching the movie trying to figure out, because I just thought all of the stuff once they're off the island was like terrible.
Yeah.
I'm way more like you in that I was on board for a movie that's just taking place on the island. Mm-hmm. And I will say, I had only seen a trailer maybe twice. I could never glean what the story of this movie was. I had no idea even what the premise was. Mm-hmm. I was like, I know they're on an island. I know there's a volcano. I didn't even understand that they had to get off the island because of the volcano. I could not make sense of the story of this movie based on the trailer. I had no idea that half of it was going to take place at a rich old man's mansion, which we also need to talk about the rich old man. So when they got off the island, I was like, well, where's this movie going to go now? I didn't anticipate this happening, and where it went, I was not happy with. But yeah. So I'm watching the movie trying to figure out what's a more interesting movie. And I can't buy the whole Bryce Dallas Howard conversion, which, by the way, mm-hmm. I've said before, I really should have told the person taking my ticket that I was only there to see Bryce Dallas Howard. And, yeah. I was not disappointed. She's not good in the movie, but like mm-hmm. at least I had 2 hours to see Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah.
So I don't buy her whole conversion that now all of a sudden she's all about dinosaur rights mm-hmm. and is trying to save them. But okay. I think the movie attempts for about 30 seconds to introduce this interesting, as you said, moral question. Mm-hmm. Do we have responsibility to these things now that they are alive, even though mm-hmm. we created them? And to what, how much responsibility do we have, again, knowing that they are incredibly dangerous and are throwing the entire global ecosystem out of balance because mm-hmm. of what we did, right?
Yep.
So I think that's sort of interesting. So I had this idea that they're on the island trying to get the dinosaurs off because they feel a responsibility to save them.
Mm-hmm.
The evil poacher people, they're not really poachers, but are also on the island trying to get the dinosaurs off for what we discover is to bring them back to Jurassic Mansion mm-hmm. to sell them for shockingly low amounts of money yeah. to the highest bidders. The very notion that, like, foreign powers are going to weaponize dinosaurs as their next.
These are the dumbest ideas.
I mean, it's so insulting. Anyway,
yeah.
I thought, well, there's an interesting movie that these guys are trying to get the dinosaurs off the island to bring them back to sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt and whoever also trying to get the dinosaurs off the island, mm-hmm. like without the other guys knowing that they're there or that that's what they're doing. And so you have two groups. It's people trying to steal the building in Ant-Man.
Yeah.
It's like everyone's yeah. trying to get the dinosaurs off the island before each other. I thought that's a more interesting movie.
Mm-hmm.
At least a movie I might have liked better. But instead, we get Jurassic Mansion.
I'm halfway there with you because I don't think any of the stuff with the mercenaries works. I don't understand why this series needs so many mercenaries. Like, obviously it's just for cannon fodder, but at the same time, like, this is like 4 movies where there's
yeah
half the cast is mercenaries.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
And also, why is it, yeah, they're cannon fodder and it's always supposed to be like people that we're okay seeing get eaten because they're bad people.
Yeah.
But then this movie also continued. This one doesn't, I will say, but other movies have gone out of their way
mm-hmm.
to so eat the innocent people.
Yeah, so one of, like, Richard Schiff
right.
or Martin Gennaro and
or the assistant in the last movie.
I read in the Wikipedia page for this movie that they made a deliberate choice to not have the good guy a good guy get eaten because they said that the reaction against what they did to Zara in Jurassic World was so negative that only the despicable people die in this one, which it was weird because it was kind of jarring because I kept like waiting. I'm like, which of the good guys is
right.
going to be the one
right.
that get horribly mutilated?
Right.
But no, instead now they're just smothered by pillows.
This is the first movie in the Jurassic Park franchise where
a girl gets sent to her room.
People are murdered by other people, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's the first non-dinosaur violence that we get. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't even know where to start with all the stupid shit in this movie, but
yeah.
one of the big reveals mm-hmm. is that John Hammond was not working alone and
oh,
had
no.
a secret silent partner.
Oh, no.
Played by James Cromwell.
He's really good at being a silent partner,
just
by the
as
way.
Important in mm-hmm. the creation of Jurassic Park.
You mean the selectively British James Cromwell?
Oh, boy. Like, did no one say, you know what,
Jimmy,
we got to do another take,
because... Yeah.
You were not British in that scene at all.
I want to see the scene. Like, it could be like a Marvel prologue where John Hammond, a de-aged.
Oh, yeah.
John Hammond.
Charles
and a de-aged,
Xavier and Magneto
and a
style.
De-aged James Cromwell are like, well done. Let's go make our canes.
I mean, to talk about the girl is like a whole separate show almost, because for so
God,
much of this movie, you're just
no.
like, there's a little girl in this movie who's in her own movie, and
she's
why is she here?
She's the good guy who could have been eaten that I would have right. been fine with.
Why is she here? Is it just because we need a kid in the movie, because every one of these movies needs kids in the movie, right? And then the reveal of why she's in the movie, you're like, huh? And then, well, we're in spoilers. It's revealed pretty late in the movie.
Yeah.
She's a clone.
Mm-hmm.
And James
because
Cromwell.
Because that's what this movie needed.
Clone
human
humans.
Clones.
But it's literally.
They have no reaction to it.
Nothing. They're just like, huh, all right, well, let's go get a sandwich. I mean, nothing comes of it, even a little bit. There are no implications. No one is shocked. No one is like, whoa, we're cloning humans now? That's crazy. Nope, nothing. Just like, she's mm-hmm. a clone? Huh, pass me my shoes.
There's more reaction to human cloning in Judge Dredd than there is in this.
Law.
Like, all right, we'll totally, we need to focus time on the little girl clone, but when she frees all the dinosaurs, and then they give her, like, a ride. I'm like, if yeah. anything, yeah. I'm less conflicted about this girl than I am about these dinosaurs. I would have just been like, you little shit, and then just thrown her to the
well,
wolves.
Because then
but they give her a ride.
But the scenes
she's
we see
be
after
their
that
daughter.
Are, like, of innocent people on a beach about to be eaten
yes.
by giant dinosaurs. And I guess
she's
we're just supposed to be
worst.
Like, well, like, because it's Jurassic World now, and we're finally reaping what we've sown. But, like, no, we're not. She's, no, we are not, because this is only happening because she let them go.
Yeah. She's the biggest villain of this entire franchise.
Well, her and B.D. Wong.
Fuck B.D. Wong. Like, I like
Jurassic
B.D.
Park
Wong.
Was on TV last night
oh,
on Showtime, and so I put a couple minutes of it on.
Wait,
just
the first
be,
one you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to be reminded of what a good movie is. Mm-hmm. And B.D. Wong came on screen, and I was like, huh, at no point 25 years ago did I realize
no.
he's a criminal genius.
No, the abominable Dr. Fibes, you mean?
Abominable Dr. Wong.
Yeah. Like, by the next movie, it's just going to be, like, Fu Manchu mustache and stuff like that. No, the,
he does escape. Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, thank goodness that he's around to give us more Jurassic cocktails.
What? Why?
Why do we need to mix dinosaurs, by the way?
Okay, first of all,
it's not like there's only 10 different species
of
dinosaur.
No new dinosaur.
No.
Is going to be no like made up dinosaur is ever going to be scary. It's all just a variation on what you've already done. So
yeah.
Indoraptor isn't any scarier than regular Velociraptor or T-Rex
yeah.
or even the little thing that kills Newman in Jurassic Park, which mm-hmm. manages to be scarier than Indoraptor.
Yeah.
yeah. So stop creating dinosaurs. That's
yes.
one. Mm-hmm. Two, if there's a giant mansion, Jurassic Mansion,
yeah.
with an even bigger lab that is roughly the size of an airport.
It's in the basement.
It's in the basement, so
yeah.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
And in this lab, mm-hmm. they have the ability to clone and create
mm-hmm.
any dinosaur they want, as many as they want, right?
Yeah.
Why are they bringing back dinosaurs from the other island at all? Why am I...
Because stupid.
Why am I driving to get pizza that can kill me
mm-hmm.
if I have all the ingredients to make pizza at home?
It's because the pizza that you make at home, you need to get pizza from the pizza shop that will kill you to teach the pizza that you have at home how to be a better pizza, to be a more controllable pizza.
Like, I recognize that the whole thing is we need Blue, right?
Fuck Blue,
we need,
by the way.
No, come on. Blue has the biggest character arc in this movie.
Blue is the warmest Blue... raptor.
Eating spaghetti. Anyway, so we need Blue. That's like the actual plot detail that says, so here's why we have to go to the island and bring back dinosaurs. We need Blue because we need Blue's special DNA mm-hmm. to make Indoraptor susceptible to our commands.
Mm-hmm.
But then just go get Blue. Why are you bringing back every dinosaur to sell if you can just make them in your lab? I can't wrap my head around
and
this
maybe
whole
just
mission.
Make, just make good ones.
Yeah. Well, I recognize, but you can't weaponize those. You can't sell them.
If all it takes
$4 million for all, dinosaur.
Easiest Slovenia arms dealer.
Okay. $5 million for a dinosaur? Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
He's just like, it's half price of my house. So. No, the
so many stupid things I want to talk about in this movie.
It's just like, okay, Blue is the worst thing that's ever happened to, like, life in general. Because
no.
Blue is so stupid that, like, Blue is no longer my favorite color. Like, I have to find a new one. Like, just an example of how much blue is, like, the self-detonating nuclear weapon of this franchise is, at the beginning, they've got, like, the Rafe Spall is showing Bryce Dallas Howard all the dinosaurs that they need to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, I need you to carpool.
Right.
I need you to get these guys.
Right.
And he goes, and this one, and then she goes, blue. And then he's just like, yes, blue, blah, 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 blah. I'm just like, no, you would be like, wait a minute, you named him blue? Like, a normal person would do stuff like that.
They know all about blue because they have the footage. The science video
that they just
that
leave out.
Pratt shot that they leave out in the basement. And I'm watching that and I'm like, wait, who edited this and laid the voiceover over other images? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not just like he pressed record and talked. Like, someone went in and pulled the audio and then put it over something that they cut together.
I don't talk during movies, but after I said two things to I was sitting next to Erica while I was watching it for Jan's birthday. And I said two things. One of them was, of course, they just leave the video out.
Well,
that was one. Right. And then, why is Chris Pratt dressed like Bruce Springsteen?
Tell me.
Come on out for the kingdom.
This is obviously taken from that Red Letter Media video about the Phantom Menace. But, like, tell me two things about the Chris Pratt character.
He was a chauvinist?
Was.
So he doesn't even.
I'm
have
saying
that
in
anymore.
This movie, tell me two things about his character.
He's never wrong.
Okay.
And he's a man.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, and he's the star of the movie. He's the main character in this movie, and I can't tell you anything about him except, like, he's heroic?
Yeah.
Question mark?
Well, it's because he's heroic by default, because he's not trying to rip teeth out of animals.
Right. I don't even understand his motivation. All of a sudden, he decides to come back. He has to
it's
be convinced
the girl.
To come back.
He's got to go see about a girl.
Back? Right.
Why did they split them up?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
What's the point of that?
It doesn't inform their characters or this story in the slightest.
No.
In the slightest.
No.
It literally could have been her coming home to their shared apartment and saying, hey, Rafe Spall asked me to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And bring back these dinosaurs. And he could have been like, oh, you know, I don't agree with what you've devoted your life to. This is one of those things we don't agree on, but let's sit down and have dinner anyway because we're still together because the last movie supposedly made us invest in this relationship.
Instead of taking their car and then driving away with the clone after Jurassic Mansion, wouldn't it have been a better callback ending if they took a helicopter and then Bryce Dallas Howard is watching, like, Clone Girl sleeping on Chris Pratt's shoulder, and then they open up the door and then throw her out?
Better ending, for sure. I thought it was so weird as soon as someone died. I guess it was Rafe Spall. I just was like, oh, so they're her parents now? Like, it very quickly becomes, like, we'll take care of you. You're ours now.
Haley Joel Osment was treated horribly in AI and did so much less than this little asshole.
Here's the thing, though. They're alive, like her. The movie doesn't even come close to earning that idea. Do you know what I mean? Because it's so not interested in actually dealing with this idea of to what level are we responsible for these things that we make.
Yes.
It sort of raises the question early on and then ignores it for the rest of the movie and then tries to pretend like there is some responsibility because, hey, they're alive after all, because the little girl says they're alive like me. But
by the way, we started talking about this before we began the show, but, like, okay. The whole point was how do we get – the whole arc of this trilogy is how do we get them from Jurassic World out into the real world?
Right.
Why do you want to see that?
I don't know.
Like, do you want to see, like, an animal, like, a dinosaur kill somebody just, like, living their life?
Right.
Do you want that?
Because, again,
like,
now
why do you want that?
Now it's the end of the Lost World, where the T-Rex is just running through Los Angeles or wherever it is. Right. So that's the whole next movie, I guess, is that.
And then it's got to be, that's going to be the next movie. Then the movie after that, it's going to be, like, 10 years ago was the great D-Day attack, and like the little now,
girl pushed a button,
and now there's like fucking apocalypse, and there's gonna be burning trash cans, and then there's gonna be spray only paint Chris that says Pratt like no dinos served, oh, and boy. Shit. Like it's gonna be
Trevorrow. He's a genius.
Why is he the brain trust of this trilogy? Like, because as much as this is J.A. Bayona's movie, it's really Colin Trevorrow's movie.
Yeah, because he's J.A. Bayona is directing a garbage script.
Yes.
And trying to direct it well, but yeah. Like, it's a garbage script. And it is exactly what I was saying with Ant-Man and the Wasp, where it's literally, it just kind of rushes from one thing to another. That is this movie, like, yeah. Crazy. And it's all just wall-to-wall, like, score that is way too bombastic, not memorable, but no. Just like noisy.
No, that's Giacchino for you, because he's working on like 70 is movies.
Was
a
this
year.
Giacchino?
Yeah, he used to be like really good.
Yeah,
but I feel like he just does. It's like he does a movie like every day now, and it shows.
Yeah, I did not like the score for this movie. No. I didn't like. I just thought there were so few moments that were memorable in any way in terms of visuals. I know, you know, one scene that a lot of people talk about is it a Brachiosaurus, a Brontosaurus?
Yeah, I like that shot.
Yeah. I was talking with JB and Jan, and Jan's whole point was like, yeah, but aren't there, you know, hundreds of dinosaurs that are also dying on that island? Why are we just sad about the one?
Yeah.
My feeling was the one kind of stands in for all of them in particular because
yes. And also
it's not dangerous. Yes. You know, it's,
and also it's the first one that we ever saw in Jurassic right. Park, which is even more ruined because Trevorrow and Bayona were like, that's actually the same one.
Did they really?
They really said that. Also, the T-Rex is actually the same T-Rex from the first Jurassic Park. Also, that scene is... I like the way that scene's shot.
Yeah.
Except they screw it up because they cut away to Bryce Dallas Howard crying with a John Deere hat on. And it's stupid because now it looks like one of those fucking car commercials where a spouse where somebody gets their spouse like a car for Christmas. It's got a bow on it, but this is like somebody got her a John Deere tractor and she's like a huge John Deere fan, and then she sees this glow of this new John Deere and she's crying. That's what it fucking looks like when you put a John Deere hat on her.
I would argue that anytime you cut to Bryce Dallas Howard, you're not screwing up, but I understand what you're saying. Yeah, it's, you know, because again, there's It's manufactured emotion in the shot, but at least, once again, it is trying to deal with the implications of an action, you yes. know, where it's like, oh, this is, we feel bad that this is happening. They don't deserve this. We made them. This isn't their fault. So that scene is like, okay. Speaking of these guys trying to just ruin all of Jurassic Park, and this isn't fair because...
You mean the movie or the park? Like the first movie?
The movie, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
They didn't do this, so I'm not holding this against them. But I read more than one person, and I don't remember where it was, maybe in like comments or something, say like that this movie would have worked so much better if Rafe Spall was actually Tim from Jurassic Park. And I thought,
No.
Why do you want to ruin Jurassic Park even more? Why when I watch Jurassic Park now, do I want to be like, oh, this kid's going to grow up to be a monster?
Yeah.
Who murders his not grandpa with a pillow and then gets eaten by dinosaurs.
The only reason why people aren't more like Last Jedi angry about this is because the character that they turned into master villain is B.D. Wong, and nobody cared about B.D. Wong.
Here's a question I have. Early on when Rafe Spall is talking to Bryce Dallas Howard and talking about, like, we're going to move them to this sanctuary.
Yeah.
This was John Hammond's dream, for these dinosaurs to just live in peace on their own.
Yeah, he says that in The Lost World at the end.
John Hammond says that?
Yeah, it's like in the video at the end when they're doing like the outro, basically.
Okay, so clearly I haven't seen The Lost World enough, because I'm watching that and I'm like, no, this was not his dream. His dream was to make them into a theme park.
Yeah, no, by the end of The Lost World, his thing was that they needed to be left alone, and that's what it should be.
Okay. This movie shouldn't ask me to remember The Lost World.
No, no. Okay, so like, I, Yeah, I don't like the callbacks that this movie does at all.
What are they? Because I probably missed a bunch of them.
Like, at the end when Blue kills, what's it say, the Indoraptor on the Triceratops skull,
yeah, that's great.
And then lets out same T-Rex roar,
right.
Or when Clone Girl is hiding in, like, the elevator thing, but it's got, like, the door, like, the kitchen cabinet.
Yeah. Like the dumbwaiter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are you calling me a dumb witch? I don't know. But, no, it's just like, those things are, it's like actively making you mad at the movie. It's like, just stop reminding me of stuff.
Just,
or like trying to take, get
right.
goodwill
right.
by reminding me of stuff that right. was done well by somebody else.
Right.
Stop fucking this taking credit for it.
But, and this is a thing though, that all these movies do now that like, Solo did it, Jurassic World did it,
yeah.
where it's like they just want to keep reminding you of this other thing that you love as though that's enough to convince you that you like this movie. If
yeah.
it just reminds you of this other better movie. Also, what was I going to say about the... I forget. I'll come back to it, I'm sure.
What did you think of... there, like on Slash Film, they brought this up, and it's not something that I... really dwelled on, but it's something that I can kind of recognize when somebody reminds me of it. And if you guys are upset by anything political, just skip ahead for maybe 2 minutes.
Yikes.
Like, are they deliberately trying to make this into some kind of, like, political allegory in a clumsy way?
I don't think that they are, but I think they are. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The only really... I thought they brought up a few things on Slash Film that yeah. I felt like were a stretch. You know, some
yeah.
mentions of, like, Toby Jones' hair or whatever.
Yeah.
The only super obvious one, even mentioning, like, where Melania is from, like, no. But at one point, the character says, what a nasty woman.
Yes.
And I was like, what is that doing in this movie?
Yeah.
You're not a political movie. Mm-hmm. Don't just throw that in there to all of a sudden try to tell us that you are saying something at
yeah.
all.
Yeah. And it also, like, opens up this door of, like, weird
right.
one-to-ones that people are coming up
exactly.
with.
Exactly.
Whereas it's not that movie.
No.
Like, because now I'm thinking, because if he didn't say that, I wouldn't be thinking any of this stuff.
Not at all.
It's that one line.
Right.
But now I'm thinking, like, well, he's a hunter, and so are...
Sure.
...
Right.
Or it's like stuff like that. Or it's like, well, what do the dinosaurs represent? Like, what they were unleashed. What have we unleashed?
It's,
like, it's like you don't want to go down that
no.
road. Like, people criticize.
And the movie cannot stand up to that at all.
Yeah. Like, people criticize, you know, people on film sites or columnists or reviewers and stuff for being too political. And it's like,
I wouldn't know about
if
that.
They didn't put seeds of this stuff in the movie, we wouldn't talk about these things. This movie clearly does that by,
right.
you can only
right.
read him calling her a nasty
yes.
woman as a callback to Trump in the debates about Hillary Clinton.
Right. Right.
So what the fuck?
Right.
Yeah.
Why not just have a character say, I am not a crook? Like, what do we, you know what I mean? If we're just going to throw this shit in,
yeah.
like, and to what end? What?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, this movie is not trying to actually comment on anything. I don't think,
no.
and if they are, they are doing a very, very terrible job of it mm-hmm. to the point where they have to point it out by including that line. I just thought it was
no.
so stupid.
Better line.
Yeah.
Ted Levine goes up
yeah.
to Chris Pratt
yeah.
and says, when he sees him with Blue,
yeah.
he just goes, you going native on me, Owen?
Oh, wait. She a great big fat brachiosaurus.
You
somebody
isolate that raptor.
Somebody. I'd fuck Blue. You fuck Blue. I'd fuck Blue. Is there someone on Twitter just before Fallen Kingdom came out said, like, listen, you're not allowed to look it up. I can't remember
oh, what
exactly.
are their last names?
Yeah.
yeah.
Just what was Chris Pratt's character has
yeah.
a name. what is it? And it was like,
I got that one. I didn't get Claire's. I think it was Owen Hardy or something.
I mean, even Owen, I wouldn't know if I hadn't just seen this movie and they say it a couple of times. Yeah. But like, oh, right. He's not just Chris Pratt in that movie. So many times in this movie, characters are just leaving doors unlocked. I mean, the most egregious is Ted Levine. Who's given this tooth fetish to give him a reason to go in to see the drugged Indoraptor. The Indoraptor that loves pretending he's asleep. Oh, man, here he comes. He thinks I'm sleeping.
Yeah, he looks like that Hanna-Barbera dog that does the sneaky smile.
Right? And then just leaves the cage unlocked. It's just, it's moment after moment of... Mm-hmm. This character does the dumbest thing because it will get us to the next dumb thing.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
The two new characters.
Oh, Hacker Boy. Because you know I love hackers.
And
I love
tattooed
hackers.
Vet girl,
Dino Vet.
Who has never seen a dinosaur. She introduces herself as a paleo veterinarian.
Yeah.
But has never encountered a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
I don't know. I haven't studied dinosaurs.
That's like me saying I'm a paleo veterinarian because I've seen just as many dinosaurs.
I haven't studied dino vet in school, but I'm pretty sure you can't just take the blood of
a
T-Rex.
Yeah, you can.
Are they the same blood type?
Yeah, no, it needs an infusion. Grab me some blood from that other dinosaur.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to put it, because half this movie is spent with, like, the bullet wound. I kept waiting for her to pull out, like, a little metal bowl to drop the bullet in after she pulls it out of.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was really distracted by Dino Vet because she looks like a de-aged version of my Aunt Maggie.
Oh, okay.
And I'm
just
like,
call her Aunt Maggie. From
Aunt
now on.
Maggie?
With tattoos and a surly attitude. So her
she's
thing is
surly.
She's surly.
She's the surliest.
And Hacker is afraid. And those are their, and I think he's like the comic relief character.
Yeah. I also thought that he kind of looked like Vince Vaughn, which was a weird thing because of The Lost World.
Right.
Yeah.
He gets no actual laughs, but he's just
afraid. Tries.
Oh boy, does he try.
Yeah.
And he screams and runs a lot. He does. He's involved in one of the four that I'm talking about. He's the only one who isn't eaten. Because four different times in this movie, it does the thing that you were talking about at the beginning, which is a character trying to get away from a dinosaur. They think they got away.
Yeah.
And they go, phew. And then they get attacked by a dinosaur and eaten. And sometimes it's by the same dinosaur, because a dinosaur's tail hits the elevator button and it malfunctions and reopens, and
that's
how Toby Jones dies. Again, it's like, so why are we trying? Why, you know what I mean? Like, once upon a time, Doug and I were trying to write a screenplay, and we would see movies that would do shit like that, where like, oh, and then the dinosaur's tail just swings and hits the button. And we would look at each other and just be like, why are we trying? Because we would try so hard to not have just stupid, convenient shit.
Yeah.
And like try to explain stuff. And then you watch that and you're just like, oh, okay. I guess we're just supposed to say anything happens and go with it. Guy at the beginning thinks he gets away on the ladder to the helicopter. And then the giant thing jumps
out. The Mosasaurus.
Right, exactly.
Which is fucking dumb. Because it's just...
And it was in all the trailers.
Like, it does the same thing every time.
Right. Right.
What's the point?
Right. So there are four of those, but with Hacker Boy, he doesn't get eaten. But he's like, he gets away, and then I think like the ladder starts to slide down, or there's some stupid thing where I'm like, oh, they're doing this again four times in this movie. They do that same stupid beat. Three times, then they get eaten by a dinosaur, and I guess we're supposed to be like, haha, awesome.
People died. Cool.
Right? I don't know.
I knew I was in trouble from like the first 7 seconds of this movie. Like, I hadn't even started yet. I knew I was in trouble because I saw Legendary Pictures and I'm like, ooh, they've never made a good movie. I'm like, and then their catalog flew before
my
brain.
What else is in their catalog?
It's like the Superman Returns and like Pacific Rim, and there's like a lot of hot garbage from Legendary Pictures. So
both of those movies are better than Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Yeah, they are.
lots of movies are.
I liked when, and when I say I liked, I mean I didn't. I liked when Geraldine Chaplin is just walking around Jurassic Mansion lobby and then the little girl jumps out at her, like a jump scare.
Yeah.
That's like worse than the "Is My Mask Scary" in Wishmaster. Like, I love that. I loved when James Cromwell is smothered by a pillow and then his cane drops.
The cane in slow motion.
His cane drops in slow motion. And then we realize, what have we done?
Right?
What have we done? Human greed.
What a...
ruined this great idea.
I mean, this is a movie with one bad idea after another. Yeah. Like,
why? Okay. I can't take credit for this, but it's a fascinating, wonderful observation. I can't remember where I heard it. It was either Red Letter Media or Slash Film. You already have a dinosaur that's a blend of two carnivores. Why do you need to point and do sonar with it?
Right.
Why?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know. Was it not going to go after Chris Pratt until, like, they did the psych your mind with it? No.
Also, why send it towards Chris Pratt? Why not just send it off the roof at that point? I thought it was... I kept waiting for her to, like, then just go, like, whoop, off the roof, and it jumps off the roof. But instead she points it at Chris Pratt. I was like, oh, they had a bad breakup.
That's what we call tough love.
But because he's just supposed to know to jump out of the way. It was so bizarre.
I thought it was weird how I get...
$200.
I didn't bring enough money. Where's the ATM? I didn't.
This watch, it was my grandfather's watch. It is a Timex. I take dinosaur.
If I knew Prototype would cost $28 million, I would have spent $4 million on first dinosaur with the pointy tail.
And why is there all this ethical dilemma about selling the prototype?
Yeah, because whatever at this point.
Because I know it didn't have like Blue's training DNA yet, but they're selling lots of dinosaurs that also don't have that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why is the prototype the one where we're like, whoa, 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 whoa?
Yeah, I don't know.
This movie's so goddamn stupid.
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard one of the funniest things I think I've ever heard in my entire life in reference to the Jeff Goldblum bookends.
Those were great.
Yeah. Good thing that he came back.
At least he got paid.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I do like Goldblum. If you like Goldblum...
By the way, you need a Goldblum his scene fix, is in the trailer.
Yes.
Like,
if you need a Goldblum fix,
yeah,
go see Hotel Artemis, a much better movie
okay.
that's got more Jeff Goldblum than Jurassic World Fallen okay. Kingdom.
All right. Any dinosaurs?
Thankfully, no.
Any clones?
No.
James Cromwell?
No.
Nope, I'm out.
No, sorry. Okay. I didn't know that was your big three. So...
Only one movie has them.
Yeah. Ring-a-ding-ding. So somebody said that the only way that the Jeff Goldblum bookends would work is if you see, like, out in the distance, like in the back of the hearing, is Jeff Goldblum's daughter from The Lost World, and she's wearing a USA jacket with a ton of gold medals.
I would agree with that.
I think that would be really good.
I would agree with that.
I don't understand the hearing. Like, what's the purpose of the hearing?
Well, like, they're trying
it's
to
first,
decide.
Should we save
right.
them?
Right.
But then there's like a second hearing, or is it the same hearing?
I assumed it was the same hearing that we just are coming back to.
How
now.
Long was the hearing that, like, well, all the dinosaurs have been released since
No, I
then.
Don't. I don't think this. I think the second one that we see, and I could be wrong about this, by the way, somebody listening and like, no, they really did bring him back. When we see it again at the end, I just assumed they were showing us part of that hearing that we hadn't seen. No. Do you know what I mean? Sort of like it was a flashback.
I thought it was informed by him knowing that all the dinosaurs were released because he talks about the megalomania that led up to it and things like that.
But I didn't get that impression. I think it was just like him saying, "Welcome to Jurassic World," was now really spot on. Like, he didn't realize how accurate it was.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. I assumed that they were just showing us the second part of that hearing because, well, gosh, now it really ties into the images that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was real dumb. It was everything in this movie is real, real dumb.
They had a chance to make this an okay movie if it was just a disaster movie with dinosaurs.
I guess.
A volcano, and there's dinosaurs.
Right.
That's enough for your movie.
How do we get these dinosaurs off the island while there's an active volcano erupting?
Mm-hmm.
That's a movie. Although I think the CGI lava was terrible.
Yeah, and why did they leave Chris Pratt to die by being burnt to death by lava? It's like,
luckily he didn't.
Yeah, it's like, it seems a little extreme.
His name is Owen.
Yeah, Owen.
This movie's all about extreme.
Mm-hmm. Prediction for the fourth.
Please don't make another one, everyone.
Third,
please.
Jurassic World movie.
Go the way of like the Divergent series. Stop making them.
I'm still waiting for that. I'm in line. So they're going to bring back, they're going to way overspend. I hope they say no, but I think they'll bring back Sam Neill, and they're going to bring back Laura Dern. And the poster is going to be like Fast and Furious, and it's going to say New World, Old DNA.
Did you know Laura Dern was like 28 when they made Jurassic Park?
She's a godsend. She's amazing.
Can I ask a question about Jurassic Park? I was watching, again, last night on Showtime. It's the scene where they first see the dinosaurs, and they're having this whole conversation, and like John Hammond gets his welcome to Jurassic Park. And I'm like, all right, that's a little on the nose, John Hammond. Like, we've already been talking for a while. Why are you just saying that now? It's kind of like Joel Goldblum at the end of the hearing being like, welcome to Jurassic World.
When he says welcome to Jurassic Park, I always took that as like, look at my shit.
Yeah, no, it for sure is. Why do we then get the second? This is such a specific weird question. I think it's after he says that line we get a second push in to Sam Neill as he looks up in amazement again, as though he's seeing dinosaurs for the first time.
Because it's that amazing.
It's just a very
like
weird...
in the context of the movie, it's that amazing. And then also on a meta level, what you're seeing is transcending special effects in movies.
I guess
you can take a moment.
The language of that shot.
I'm totally fine with it.
It's very weird. It's very weird. Anyway, anything else you want to say about? Is this the worst movie you've seen this year?
Second worst movie.
What's the worst?
A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
A Wrinkle in Time is a movie that I understand why people are handling it with kid gloves because of what it represents, and everybody wants it to be good. But it is fucking a catastrophe.
Does it get points for meaning well?
No, because it's
really?
Just... No.
Okay.
Not at all, because it's so...
But it's not born out of, like...
It's incompetent.
...cynical bullshit the
No,
way
but
that,
it's incompetent. It's
but,
like
but
the
so's
worst...
But so's Fallen Kingdom...
No, I... All right. Okay. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is beyond stupid, but I feel like at least professional filmmakers made it.
Okay.
Like, whatever happened in A Wrinkle in Time, like, it's not even stitched together like a movie.
Okay. I haven't seen it, so...
It's a nightmare.
I will say that before Ant-Man, I saw a series of trailers that made me not want to see movies anymore.
Yeah.
The new Fantastic Beasts movie.
Fuck that.
And then
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even see the last one, but
Johnny Depp now and Eddie Redmayne and coming off a movie I didn't like.
Right.
That
I didn't
shit
see
all
the last
over,
Fantastic
that shit
Beasts,
all over but, a series that I loved. Okay.
And then this like Nutcracker that the what story the we never told you, and it just looks like every fantasy movie that's come out in the last 10 years. I'm just like, why are all these movies the fucking same? Why? Why?
Yeah, I think I'm at the point that you were at maybe a few years ago where you just kind of went back to older stuff because you just couldn't take what was coming out anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty close.
P.S. Like, I still have a few like actual good movies I need to see.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen Hereditary.
Yeah.
I still want to see The First Purge. I still want to see Sicario, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I signed up for that Stubbs thing.
Oh, okay. Stubbs A-list?
Yeah. So,
so you get in the good lines.
So I get in the good lines. Yeah. And so I'm like, now I'm more inclined to go see those movies. Yeah.
So do you have to, do you just use your AMC Stubbs card or do they give you a new card in the mail? Or
well,
does that work?
Right now my card is just on my phone. If you have a Stubbs card, you...
Oh, it's an app?
It's an app, but okay. I think they'll send me an actual physical card, too. Okay. I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
I have a Stubbs card. I think you would just link the two accounts together, mm-hmm. but I, for the life of me, I could not sign into my Stubbs account. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't link my existing card to this one. So I just signed up for a new one, basically.
Can I talk about the theater that we go to a lot? The Megaplex.
Yeah.
And how mad I am at them right now.
Why?
Okay.
Is this South Barrington?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I went to see Upgrade with Mark like a month ago.
Yeah.
And we bought tickets at the kiosk outside. So we get our tickets. We have them already. We go to the line. There's nobody tearing tickets. It's just two people behind the customer service desk.
Which is usually what it is now.
Yeah. So I'm standing there. There's like five people ahead of me, but they're in line to buy tickets because there was nobody at the box office in the front.
Got it.
So I'm like, I'm not standing in line because otherwise what's the point of going to the kiosk?
Right.
So I just walked in and then they're just like, sir, 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 sir. And then nobody like, they're just like, you have to wait in line.
VIP readers.
You have to wait in line. And I'm like, I already bought my ticket. And then they're just like, you still have to wait in line. Even though I already have a ticket and everybody else needs to purchase, which will take at least a minute each.
Right.
So I just walked up to them and I said, here, just tear it. And they were like, you need to wait in line next time. So I was annoyed about that. Yeah. Like really annoyed. Like more so than I probably should have been. So the other day I went to go see Ant-Man.
Okay.
So I've learned my lesson now. I'm like, I'm not even going to bother with the kiosk. I'm just going to walk in, go to the customer service desk and buy my ticket. So I walk in, there's somebody tearing tickets. I just walk past them and then I just went to the customer service desk and I said, one for Ant-Man. And then they say, you can't buy tickets here. And then I said, what are you talking about? And they're like, you have to go out to the front. There's somebody at the box office. Good you can buy the ticket Lord. From. And I said, you guys are so confusing. And then guess what I did? I walked out of the theater and then went to Woodfield.
Good for you.
Because fuck them.
Yeah.
Like, what is this?
I will say, though, I've been seeing more stuff at Woodfield because it's like a little bit closer.
Yeah.
It is constantly understaffed and like not cleaned. What are they doing with that theater?
Yeah, I don't know.
It is dirty all the time.
Yeah.
It is unpleasant to go see movies there.
They had a security guy walking the aisle. Because I've noticed that, like, over the years, more theaters, like, on weekend nights will have a security guard. Yeah. So, they had a security guy, and, like, this couple was walking past him, but they looked like they didn't know where they were going. And then he goes, where are you headed? And then the guy goes, theater 49. And then he goes, let me see that. He looked at the ticket and he's just like, no, you're going to theater 14. And they're just like, oh, thanks. And then I'm just like, this is the target audience for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. The ones who go to theater 49.
That's where they're showing the good version of Fallen Kingdom. The one you didn't see. It's the secret cut. Oh, I'm
sure it exists.
It's just Jurassic Park from 1993. That's what's showing in 49.
What are movies anymore?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
There's still stuff that I'm excited about, but
I'm trying to think of stuff coming out that I am excited
surely
about.
Surely there's stuff later this year
Mission
that I'm
Impossible.
Excited about. I'm excited for Fallout, and I know there's probably stuff later this year that I'm excited about. Halloween?
Yeah. I'll see Halloween.
It Chapter 2?
That's next
I know
year.
It's next year, but it just started showing. It has shown up on HBO now.
Can you do you have a minute?
Yeah.
Can you humor me?
I'm gonna tell you real quick that because now it is playing on HBO and like being repeated, between that and my Blu-ray and my digital copy of it.
How many times?
A lot.
Nice.
Like almost every night this week.
That's great.
It's this thing now that I just put on in the background, like to feel comfortable.
I watched the last few minutes of it on cable the other day. Yeah, I do want to rewatch it. I'm kind of waiting till October. For that one,
the
I'm excited. Yeah.
It's a situation similar to I think Inception because Inception I loved the end so much with that piece of score and the montage and then the spinning of the top and the cut to black. Like I especially the music, I loved it so much that I kept going back to see the movie because I couldn't just watch the scene. I had to chase the whole build up to that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept going to see the movie just to get that feeling in those last few minutes. And that's the same with it, where like I love the smash cut to black and the score that comes up so much that I have to chase the build up to that. So I have to watch the entire 2.5 hour movie every single night.
Makes sense to me.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
I, for whatever reason, am intrigued by Christopher Robin.
Okay.
Because it's got...
Hook
like,
2.0?
Like, yeah, but it looks like literal stuffed animals are talking. Okay. It's interesting.
All right.
I don't know. I want to see it more than Skyscraper, which looks like...
Oh, I don't want to see Skyscraper.
The fucking special effects in Skyscraper are... It looks like they shot inside like a grill at Burger King. Like, what is this?
I don't even see myself watching Skyscraper on cable. That's a movie where I'm just like, nope, I can skip it.
I'll see The Meg.
Okay.
I'll see Black Klansman.
Yeah, well, for sure.
I'll see... now we're going into September. The Predator, even though I heard it's got problems.
Okay. I'll see it.
Let's see, now we're in October.
Holy cow. Halloween.
Ooh, this is a good weekend.
Okay.
Bad Times at the El Royale. Have you seen the preview for that?
Yeah.
That looks fun.
I'm in.
That looks like a movie that came out like 20 years ago, and I'm
for sure.
All for it.
2 days in the Valley.
Yes. First Man looks good. It's Gosling, Chazelle in space.
Oh, I haven't seen any trailers or
anything. I don't know who's in Goosebumps Haunted Halloween, but I liked the first one enough to see a sequel to Goosebumps.
Yeah, me too.
Halloween.
Yeah. There's a non-horror movie coming out in October that I want to see.
Venom?
God, no.
Symbiotes.
But I always get I get annoyed when...
A Star is Born. That looks good.
There it is.
Yeah.
And I always get annoyed when they put out non-horror movies in October because I'm like, I feel bad seeing it. But my God, am I excited for A Star is Born.
A Star is Born is interesting because I don't dislike Lady Gaga. I just was never a huge fan of hers. But like in the trailer, it's like one of those rare cases where they're just like, it's going to blow your mind when you hear her. And then she sings and I'm like, it is blowing my mind.
Like, well, but unfortunately, there's also a line about how she's like, people like how I sing, but they don't like how I look. I'm like, on what planet are we talking
it's like,
about?
You've done okay. If it was like Sia who said that and her hair was covering her face, maybe. They'd be like, okay, I get it, because you'd never show your face.
I'm not buying that anyone doesn't like Lady Gaga's looks.
Starting in November, I would see Bohemian Rhapsody if it wasn't Bryan Singer.
Who's being credited?
Yeah.
Like, why not just credit Dexter Fletcher and save yourself the trouble?
Suspiria, I'm interested to check out.
There's enough here.
Widows looks good. Have you seen the preview for Widows?
Know what that is.
It's the new Steve McQueen movie. It looks awesome.
Okay.
It's like male bank robbers.
Okay.
All die in a heist.
Okay.
And then their wives try to complete the heist.
Oh, who's
but
in it?
It's like,
sounds like Set It Off.
The women are Viola Davis and Michelle Rodriguez.
Oh, Chastain?
And like, no, Chastain's not in it.
I thought she had a movie with Viola Davis.
I don't know. No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Never mind.
There's Creed 2.
Not sold.
Okay. Wreck-It Ralph 2?
Nope. I mean, I know I'm going to have to see
it. Yeah, I'm going to have to see that too. I'm curious about the animated Spider-Man.
Okay.
Welcome to Marwen looks kind of good. That's the new Zemeckis.
Oh, okay.
I
disagree, but okay.
Mary Poppins
Returns. Have you seen
that
documentary?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Okay.
Yeah.
No to Mary Poppins Returns.
Okay.
All right. There's still like 10 movies
that
I'm excited enough about.
Yeah. I feel like I see through indies now, too. So like there's all this stuff where I'm just like, it's like, yo, it's getting 98% stuff. And I'm just like, sorry to bother you, but I feel like I've seen this movie before. I saw Gotti. I thought, I'm the only person in the world who likes Gotti.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, I am. 100%
you are.
Will my In Case You Miss Them be out before this podcast?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, because I feel like I do have a good rationale as to why specifically Adam Riske would like Gotti.
If you guys haven't read it yet, it should be up on the site. If not, keep looking this week for Adam's In Case You Miss Them. But also, like, you have a movie pass, and that movie is kind of like financed by movie pass, so I feel like...
It's cheating.
Or just like you're rooting for the home team, or you're like, I'm kind of a stockholder in Gotti, so therefore I like it.
They sent me a survey about, because I saw Gotti
and
they said,
like,
it said, why did you go see Gotti,
what movies were sold out?
It said, why did you go see Gotti? And one of the choices was 0% Rotten Tomato score. Like,
that was
they're
why?
Asking if you
are
ironically
you just a, are you just a contrarian?
And I wrote Travolta. Because that's honestly why I was there.
Yeah.
And
not E from Entourage?
No. He likes the Gottis so much that it's like in Jason Goes to Hell when the coroner eats Jason's heart. That's like how I pictured Kevin Connolly with John Gotti. It's amazing because it's like, I've never seen a mafia movie that is so pro-mafia, anti-government. Like, they don't blame him for a single thing that he did.
I will 100% see Gotti before I see Skyscraper.
Yeah.
You have my guarantee.
There's a scene in Gotti where Gotti goes to do a hit and the theme from Shaft plays.
Yeah.
Because you can just do that. That's like if in Skyscraper the theme for Jurassic Park played.
Anyway, that's our show on Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
You're welcome.
A real garbage movie.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
As always, you can find us at fthismovie.com. We're on Twitter at fthismovie, or you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Don't know what next week's show is going to be. Hopefully it's something better than Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I hope this was worth the wait, everyone.
Mm-hmm. In closing, I got a joke for you.
Let's hear it.
What do Outback Steakhouse and Meg Ryan have in common?
I don't know.
They're always busy.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.